truth.
Deanna Spingola. I am coming to you from the suburbs of Chicago. Thanks for joining me today in RBN's Studio B for people who can handle the truth. To see the guest lineup for Studios A and B, please click on the word schedule in the RBN banner at the top of the page at republicbroadcasting.org. Please visit Spingola.com to see the guest lineup for this program, along with relevant links. During the program, email your questions or comments to Spingola1 at yahoo.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website, Spingola.com, or by going to Spingola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the second hour after the first break at 877-488-5350. Beginning with the continuing current warfare in the Middle East and working backwards, U.S. government officials from both parties have, using orchestrated false flag events, lied to the people about 9/11, probably perpetrated by factions of the CIA and the Mossad. They have concealed the CIA's warfare in South and Central America and elsewhere. They lied about Vietnam. They lied about Korea. They lied about World War II. World War I, they lied about the invasions of Cuba leading to the Spanish-American War and the U.S. invasion of the Philippines. They lied about the war against Plains Indians. They lied about the so-called Civil War and the Mexican-American War. During all of these wars, they lied and vilified through numerous means, including making up atrocity stories about the people that the U.S. military targeted. And it's always the same story. And if we look at history, we can learn something about what is going on today. My guest today, who has looked at history, particularly the history of the so-called Civil War, something that he likes to call the War of Northern Aggression, is Al Benson, the co-author with Walter Kennedy of Red Republicans and Lincoln's Marxists. Also, Marxism in the Civil War and Lincoln's Marxist. Did I say that right?
Yeah, Lincoln's Marxist is the one that's currently out.
Right, and it's a lovely book, wonderful book. I have it. I have the Kindle version of it. And your website is revisedhistory.wordpress.com, and it's wonderful to have you back. You were on, I believe, in May, April or May. And it's delightful to have you back, Al.
Okay, well, it's good to be back.
You do regular articles, there's several that I picked out that I really would like to talk about today, in addition to your book. But I think that people just have this, they've been lied to about the Civil War, the so-called Civil War. And if we have an understanding of the Civil War, the people behind it, the socialists who came over here after the failed revolutions in 1848 and actually created groups where they studied and taught socialism, if we have an understanding of that, we can see what exactly is going on today, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, you have to understand the War on Northern Aggression before you can understand the history that's come after it.
Indeed. I totally agree with you on that. We are going to go to a quick 3-minute break, and then we will come back. And maybe you could tell us about how you got started, where your interest in the Civil War, the so-called Civil War, started, and what you did, and what started that interest. We'll be right back in 3 minutes after a word from our sponsors.
Are you concerned about fluoride, chlorine, parasites, and other contaminants in your drinking water? Dalton ceramic water filters have been made continuously since 1827 and are used by disaster relief organizations and in third world countries to supply safe drinking water. Not only do we offer gravity filter systems, but also under the sink and countertop systems. Our replacement filters can be used to upgrade your existing system. And unlike some other filters on the market, Dalton filters do not have to be primed. For more information, call us at 800-696-1435, 800-696-1435, or order online at Dalton.com. That's Dalton.com.
Allison C. is made from pure garlic through a patented process that stabilizes the actual Allison of 34 cloves of garlic in one tiny capsule. Allison only exists for a fraction of a second when you crush a clove of garlic. It is the most powerful, natural antibiotic known to man and has been proven in laboratory testing to kill bacteria, viruses, fungus, and parasites without upsetting the natural balance of healthy organisms in the body. Allison C. also helps prevent disease when taken on a regular basis. You can purchase your Allison C. through Paul Drockton's website, InternetTruth.org. Start enjoying the benefits of this all-natural supplement today. Go to InternetTruth.org for your supply. Herbal Healer Academy's new summer specials. Our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. Organic liquid iodine, liquid cal, meg, vitamin D, CoQ10 with hawthorn, colon enhancer, super 2, natural laxative, our exceptional product, Connexin, memory power, and super male and femplex. All on sale for the summer at herbalhealer.com. Also, 10% off on the HHA Survival Course. This is an important time to have this information. Might save your life. Nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education. Herbalhealer.com. Free online newsletter. Quality natural medicine supplier since 1988. We ship the same day you place your order. Free 128-page catalog with your first order. Go to herbalhealer.com today. Herbalhealer.com.
Alrighty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Al Benson. And his website is revisedhistory.wordpress.com. He writes a lot of articles and covers a lot of topics, but we're going to be talking about the so-called Civil War, or what we prefer to call the War of Northern Aggression. And that's exactly what it was. I think we think that this was two groups that got together and killed, what was it, 700,000 people? But actually only two battles were fought in the North. And that tells you just about exactly what you want to know. It was definitely a war of northern aggression, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they invaded the South. Exactly.
All right, so how did you get interested in the war?
Well, I kind of got interested actually when I was a teenager. What started it was, you know, I don't know if you have them where you're at, but they used to have what, I lived on the East Coast, they used to have what they call the Shrine Circus.
Mm-hmm.
The Shriners put it on, and it was like a carnival type thing. And my mother and I went, I think I was 15, my mother and I went, and between the acts, you know, there was a kind of a midway there, we could go down and buy things. And right in the middle of this midway was a fellow that was selling Yankee and Confederate hats. And my mother stopped there at the thing, and she said, would you like a hat? I hadn't even thought about it. you know. But I stopped and looked at them. I thought, well, yeah, why not? You know, and so she said, which one do you want? So I'm pondering between the two of them, and it's almost like there's a, this kind sounds kind of weird, I admit. It almost was like a voice over my left shoulder about 3.5 feet saying, take the gray one. So I did, you know, and that started me basically on the path that I'd been on somewhat ever since, because we were living in Massachusetts at the time, you know, and this is during the all the civil rights stuff down here. And, I mean, you didn't wear a Confederate hat in Massachusetts. I mean, you didn't do anything different in Massachusetts. It was a state of conformity. And so I never conformed, and that was part of my problem. But anyway,
that's probably a benefit, and that's probably what we should all choose to be as a nonconformist, and to be able to make our own conclusions, do our own research, and figure out what's going on instead of listening to the...
Yeah, we should, and most people don't. Most people are so concerned about what the neighbors will think that, you know, they don't do anything. They won't put a Confederate flag out, or they won't do this or that. And, well, it might bother the neighbors. It might offend somebody. That's the politically correct thing today. You don't want to offend anybody, you know, which is hogwash, because they don't care about offending you. I mean, that's fine. If they put a Malcolm X flag out there and that bothers you, well, tough, baby, learn to live with it. But if you put a Confederate flag out, well, that offends me. You need to take it down, you know. To which I would probably say, well, be thankful you still have the right to be offended, because it's one of the few you've got left.
Right. Okay,
so anyway,
and so are you still living in the North, or no?
No, I'm in Louisiana, thank heaven.
Okay, so you finally followed your heart to the South, right?
Yeah, it took a while, but we've been here 10 years now, and it's probably been the most content 10 years of our lives.
Good. Now, what we hear all kinds of things like, Lincoln wanted to... first, let's talk a little bit about Lincoln. What kind of a guy was Lincoln? Does he actually deserve the Lincoln Memorial?
Not hardly. It's a memorial to a secular god, is what it is.
Okay, so
I've been to it. You know, and I looked at it, you know, before I had enough sense to really know what it was all about, and I thought it was something. Like most people, I was brought up in the public school. I thought Lincoln was a pretty good guy, you know, and I've had to change my opinion.
Right. I mean, just look at all of the streets and public parks and all the rest that are named after Lincoln. I'm in Illinois, the land of Lincoln.
Yeah,
supposedly.
I know. I live there, too.
So what kind of a guy was he?
He was a pragmatic, shrewd politician. He was a lobbyist for the big northern railroads. He was a lawyer who made a lot of money. He wasn't this hayseed lawyer you see in the movies. He was a lawyer, like I say, for the northern railroads. He made about, in the 1850s, he was making about $5,000 a year, which was big money for those days, when the average person worked for a dollar.
And he also, in just about everything he did, he made money. For instance, when he and his Chicago friend went and looked at property down south, not too far south, but in southern Illinois, thereabouts, and westward, then they purchased all of this property, and then when it came time to figure out where to start the transcontinental the Continental Railroad, then he chose to start where he purchased property because he knew that he was going to make a killing. I mean, he was a Whig, which evolved from the Federalist Party. He was the first the first president to run as a Republican. And
well, actually, he was the second president. Fremont ran in 1856 as a Republican.
Oh, okay, but he was the first one that was elected.
Yeah, he was the first one to get elected. Fremont didn't do really well, and he was the first one to get elected. The Republican Party was, I think they started like 1854 or thereabouts.
Right.
And Fremont was the first one. I mean, Fremont was a radical, too, if you go back and dig into his history. So the Republican Party really had radical beginnings. I mean, you went from Fremont to Lincoln to, you know, whoever else has come along since.
Right, right. And of course, they evolved from the Whigs, who evolved from the Federalists, you know, the party of Abraham,
basically the Republicans were the, like the descendants of the Whig Party after it died out.
Right.
Henry Clay had been in the Whig Party. Lincoln had, too, in the beginning. Lincoln was a disciple of Henry Clay. And
mm-hmm.
Henry Clay was the man that started what they call the American system.
Right.
And really what it was redistribution of the wealth. I mean, that's the best way you can put it nowadays. They wanted to take public money and use it for to fund private things. Interestingly enough, all the private things they funded, the canals and railroads, all ended up being in the North. Very little
right.
got done in the South.
Right. And Illinois, he was basically in charge of the canal, building the canals, which was a big fiasco here in Illinois. And it was horribly economically devastating for the state.
Yeah, what these things were, and the railroads, the Transcontinental Railroad going out west and everything, it was all this, it's what we call today corporate fascism. You know, certain, or crony capitalism, certain businesses who have friends in Washington, you know, get all these fat contracts through the government. You know, so, I mean, they're making money, and because they know all the right people. And that's the way this thing works. And it's worked this way right up through the Iraq, you know, Afghanistan and the Iraq War, and, You know, the people who know the people in Washington get all the perks, and they get the $1 million contracts, and, you know, and that's the way it works. And they want to
right.
keep it that way.
Right. And it always, as you say, it always has been that way. And yet, because of the corporate media, people are led to believe that the Republicans are somehow the conservatives and that the Democrats are the liberals. And basically, that's just to set us up against each other.
Well, the media, so, I don't even call them the news media anymore. That's a laugh. I mean,
sure
as far
is.
As news, the media is a joke. I look at some of the stuff in the newspapers and I think, you know, no wonder people are stupid if they believe this drivel. You know, I encourage people, get on the internet and do your homework. Just because some nitwit in the media says it doesn't mean it's true. I don't believe anything. If the news media today told me the sun rose in the east, I'd check the sky in the west tomorrow morning. And that goes
That's
the same
true.
With most of the politicians.
How true. Oh, true. Well, tell us a little bit about the 48ers.
Please?
Tell us a little bit about the 48ers.
Okay, they came over here after, you know, after they were involved in the revolutions in Europe, 1848, 49, and people tell you that they were, and they use the word Republicans, freedom fighters, whatever you want to call it. You can see some of that on the internet. They don't tell you that a lot of them were socialists, communists, and freethinkers. Freethinkers are people that want freedom from God. And
Al, we do have to take a real quick 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
these annoying collection calls.
Imagine being free from your debt without settling and with no payment plan, no negotiating or filing bankruptcy, and no attorneys. What if you could eliminate the risk from all your unsecured debt in about 90 days and keep all your money? You can. It's called Zero Debt Guarantee, and it works. There's no other program of its kind on the planet, and we guarantee the results in writing. Call now, 800-477-9256. Let our team of experts provide you with the resources to fight back, stop collection calls, and prevent and stop wage garnishments and bank levies. If you're facing foreclosure, we can help. Don't go it alone. Get free information now by calling 800-477-9256. Talk to an expert who has also completed our program. Call 800-477-9256 for free info or go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's 800-477-9256 or go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com.
An effective, 100% organic nutritional supplement is now available to be shipped out to you, rush delivery. Heart and Body Extract is a 100% natural, organic, and wild-crafted formula made out of garlic, hawthorn berries, hawthorn leaves, coleus, motherwort, bilberry, butcher's broom kelp, mistletoe, ginger, and cayenne pepper. It is an excellent formula designed to balance and support the heart and circulatory system. It is extremely effective and starts to work within days. Order your 2-month supply by visiting heartandbody.com or by calling 866-295-5305. 866-295-5305. Take the high road to a long and happy life. HeartandBody.com.
As many of you know, natural supplements are fantastic for your body and have zero side effects. You need to restore your body's natural balance. Keravim strives to carry only the highest quality dietary supplements and natural vitamins that can be beneficial in helping your body recover from the impact of daily stress, allergens, illness, environmental pollution, and the aging process. Why buy from Keravim? Simple. Keravim provides a rewards program. Earn $1 for every $10 spent, free health consultations, free shipping on all orders, and an additional 10% discount on every order when you mention the coupon code RBN. Call 866-647-4372. That's 866-647-4372. Or go to teravim.com, that's TERRAVIM.com. Teravim, the best supplements on earth.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Al Benson, and he's an author. And his website is revisedhistory.wordpress.com. He has written Red Republicans and Lincoln's Marxist, Marxism in the Civil War, and Lincoln's Marxist, which is his most recent book, and which I have both of them. And you mentioned that Lincoln was basically his political idol was Henry Clay, who was a Freemason and the Grand Master of Masons in Kentucky. And Clay was the U.S. Senator and Speaker of the House of Representatives. And that Lincoln also favored, he was an advocate of the American system, which was actually the British system, and a legacy of Alexander Hamilton. Okay, so we were talking about the 48ers, that they came over here from the failed revolutions, the socialist revolutions, Marxist revolutions in Europe. Okay, so pick it up from there.
Okay, what the socialists in Europe really were trying to do was not make everybody free. What they were trying to do was take, well, like a country like Germany had 18 or 19 different separate states, and they were all ruled, you know, individually. What the socialists and the people, the 48ers, were trying to do was to take that country over and centralize all that so that the 18 states would be ruled as one country. And they did try to do the same thing in Italy, you know, and these other countries. It was not about making people free and able to practice democracy and all that. It was about centralization. When it failed there, a lot of them, several thousand of them, came over here. You know, they went to different countries that they eventually got thrown out of or asked to leave, and they, a lot of them ended up over here, and they ended up being a good part of the nucleus for the Republican Party, which was just being formed about that time. So, you had socialists in 1860 that helped to write the Republican platform, which we mention in the book. And then, the foundation for the Republican Party is not small government. The foundation for the Republican Party, and it holds true today, is collectivism. Now, you may have individual, you had Ron Paul, he ran as a Republican. I supported him. You know, he's not a typical Republican. And,
he's really a libertarian.
Yeah, but he ran as a Republican. And the Republican Party, at least here in Louisiana, and I think around the rest of the country, moved heaven and earth to make sure his delegates didn't have a shot. And that's where the Republican Party is, you know. They don't want people who are honestly small government. They want people who go along, play the game. Their current candidate will go along and play the game, you know. And
sure.
If he wins, I have my doubts. But
right.
This may sound
now
way out.
There were a lot of people who came over here. They were pretty well educated. A lot of them came with law degrees. A lot of them were writers, and they created a lot of magazines and newspapers in order to promote their agenda. And
Yeah, your average 48er that came over here wasn't just an ordinary infantry soldier in the revolutions over there. I mean, these people were journalists, lawyers. The socialists and communists belonged to different groups in most cases that promoted socialism or communism. So, I mean, these were not, you know, average folks. These were what, you know, you would consider to some degree to be the elite college professors, you know, these kind of people. And they brought their vision of socialism over here with them. And if they couldn't do it over there, they were going to try and do it over here.
Right. And didn't they also become very active in the abolitionist movement?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, you had a lot of them that got into that. Supposedly, they didn't like slavery. A lot of them had a problem with, and here again, the history books don't get into this, is private property. They didn't like private property, and you can tell with what Sherman did in the South when he marched across Georgia.
Despicable man.
He had several of these 48er generals in his, you know, in his brigades, and private property was to be destroyed. You stole what you could, or they call it appropriating. You stole what you could carry off, and the rest of it you destroyed. You know, and that's the typical Marxist rationale, because they hate private property. To them, the slaves were private property. So you get rid of the slaves. What they really wanted to do was transfer the slaves from being privately owned to being supervised by the government. And they did that after the war with the Union Leagues during Reconstruction.
And they've done it since then with the welfare program.
They've done it ever since with the welfare programs and all the rest of it. I mean, these folks get a government check, you know, and they're not their own people.
Right.
They live on the government.
All right, Al, we got to go to a break. We will be right back, and we'll pick this up on the other side of the break. A lot of profound thoughts here. Be back, folks.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dried guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The Freeze-Dry Guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every Meat Eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus Meat Eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the Freeze-Dry Guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Meet Jerry D.
Hi.
Jerry and his family, like you, are very concerned about world conditions and have gathered many emergency preparedness items, including Turtle Tough shelters.
We have added two 24-foot Turtle Toughs to our supplies and feel very secure knowing our large family is ready for whatever the future may bring.
Turtle Tough shelters are not tents. They are permanent yet portable four-season geodesic frame shelters that are as strong as a cabin at a fraction of the cost and are easy to set up, take down, and move anywhere. Available in two sizes. Get your Turtle Tough shelter and accessories included at TurtleToughShelters.com. That's Turtle, T-U-F-F, Shelters.com. Or call 801-623-3288. That's 801-623-3288. Or see them online at TurtleToughShelters.com. Turtle Tough Shelters, your all-season home away from home.
Hey there, my name is Frank Bates, but I'm about to tell you the next 60 seconds could get me in a lot of trouble. I just created a free video presentation at 123crooks.com that exposes the electricity monopolies and government agencies for what they really are. Incompetent, lying crooks that are counting on your ignorance and fear to keep your power bills criminally high. Some have called this a conspiracy. Others have called it a cover-up. And you'll be shocked to find out how deep the conspiracy goes. My video at 123crooks.com exposes the truth and shows you the secret of how I beat them and how you can beat them too. Watch the controversial video that thousands of other smart patriots have already seen in the last 3 months. Go to 123crooks.com and discover one weird trick to slash your power bill and protect your home. Go watch my video now at 123crooks.com before they force me to shut it down. 123crooks.com.
And our guest today is Al Benson. He is the co-author with Walter Kennedy of Red Republicans and Lincoln's Marxist, Marxism in the Civil War, and Lincoln's Marxist. His websites are revisedhistory.wordpress.com, and his older one is albensonjr.com. And you were talking about the situation with the slaves, the freed slaves, following that deadly war, and basically it equalized everyone. It made all of us equal so that we could all be slaves together of a different kind. We would be economic slaves, debt slaves.
Well, basically they were, you know, like I say, the slaves really, I mean, they were technically freed, but, you know, they were dependent, you know, on the Republican regime. I never forgot a story my father told me. When he was a youngster, he used to go fishing down by the river that wasn't too far from where we lived. And there was an old ex-slave that he knew that used to go fishing there, and they talked, you know. And the old ex-slave told him this story, and he said when the Yankees came through, he said they came up to where we were at the plantation, and he said, you're all free now, you can go. And one of the slaves had the presence of mind enough to ask, If we're free, right? Yes, you're free. You can go. If we're free, why can't we stay if we want to? And he never forgot the reply that the Yankee soldier gave him. He said, "You're free to go, but not to stay."
Wow.
That was freedom. You know, you can do what we want you to do, but if you decide you want to do something else, you're not free to do that. You know.
Right.
So what they did with the slaves there was most of them grabbed what they could carry, went out on the road, walked a little ways, and after dark they came back. Because a lot of the slaves didn't want to leave where they were.
Right, and many of them, now the slaves, the biggest majority of the people in the South did not have slaves.
It was just the
big plantations, maybe, what, 5%, you think?
Yeah, I read some figures, I think it was a census of 1850. I'm quoting off the top of my head now. The number of plantation owners in the South that had, I think, 100 slaves or 500, I can't remember which now, or over that, the number of plantation owners that had that many in the South were 1,200.
Okay.
Now you're talking out of a population of, you know, 5.5-6 million. There were 1,200 that had over a certain amount. Your average slave owner had anywhere from 1 to 5 slaves, and he went out in the field and he worked every day right alongside them. They came in at night, they sat down for supper, and they ate at the same table. And that was the way it was on the average. By the same token, your average Southerner did not abuse his slaves. I mean, if you're going to get work out of these folks, you couldn't abuse them.
So that's very contrary to what Harriet Beecher Stowe said.
You see these things on TV, Roots and all the rest of it, and you think that every Southerner lived in a plantation the size of Rhode Island or Connecticut and had 500 or 600 slaves, and he beat every one of them every morning before breakfast. He got his kicks that way. And then expected them to go out and work 20 hours a day in the field. I mean, if you stop and think about it, it's ludicrous.
And he also provided them with housing, with food, with a garden plot. He took care of them.
They could raise their own food. They could even sell it if they wanted to.
Right.
You know,
and if they got too old to work, what happened? Did he just kick them out?
Please?
When they got too old to work, did he just kick them out?
No, they took care of them. You know, they literally had cradle to the grave security.
Right.
When one of the slaves got sick, the family doctor came that took care of the white folks, and he took care of the slaves.
Now, what as opposed to the laborers in the North who were making probably a dollar a day, a lot of whom came over from Ireland with the big potato famine over there. They came over here and worked in Manhattan for a dollar a day. What happened if they got sick or couldn't work?
On their own. Chances are they got fired if they were gone for a few days. They put somebody else in their place for a dollar a day and they're out of a job.
And they kick them out, take away their property, and they'd be out on the street.
Well, there was no way. I mean, if they were sick for a long time, they lost everything they had.
Right.
And they probably didn't have much to begin with. You know, but there was no taking care of them. There was no nothing, unless friends came in and did it. There was no, you know, no care for them. They certainly got nothing from the people they worked for. You know, all they got was their day's pay. And I don't think some of those, my grandfather, when they came from Northern England in the early 1880s. My grandfather worked in a factory when he was 9 years old, and I don't think he made a dollar a day.
Wow.
So, I mean, you know, it wasn't a great life. You know, the ones who could break free and manage to put a few dollars aside and try and go out west and get their own land, they might have had a shot at something. But the ones that stayed in the East, I mean, they were literally worked to death.
Indeed. All righty. So we have these people who came over, getting back to the socialists, who came over from Europe. Many of them came in with, as you mentioned, law degrees, or they were very well educated, and so they were able to promote their agenda in various newspapers, and they established a lot of newspapers. And one such fellow, Friedrich Kapp, K-A-P-P, had a law degree from the University of Berlin, and he gave a speech in New York's Union Square in April 1861, and he argued that liberty was indivisible, a view that Marx shared, and that disunion would be a curse to the U.S. And so when the people in the South decided to secede, there was a response. And many of those people that wanted to secede actually were sent South to do just exactly what they did. So go ahead and talk to us about secession.
Well, I mean, the South didn't secede, you know, and here again, and you've probably seen the same thing today, newspaper columnists that said, well, the South seceded so they could keep their slaves, you know, and that's more hogwash. I mean, that's a polite term for what they spread around nowadays. The South could have kept their slaves better by staying in the Union. Lincoln had already said, I have no desire to interfere with slavery wherever it exists. You know, I'm trying to preserve the Union. I don't care about slavery one way or the other. You know, so the South did not secede so they could keep their slaves. I mean, that's, you know, that gives you the impression, well, that the Union was going to free the slaves. You know, the Union couldn't have cared less about freeing the slaves. There was more prejudice against black people in the North than there was in the South. This was why the Underground Railway, you know, supposedly freed slaves and let them get up north, ran all the way to Canada, because the people in the northern states didn't want the blacks stopping there.
Right. In fact, they had black laws.
They wanted to keep them moving right along, get them out of here, help them out, give them something to eat, and then get them on the road. We don't want them here. You know, and that was the northern attitude. These free staters in Kansas, if you go back and read some of the things they wrote, they wanted their area free for white labor. And some of them actually said that. They didn't want blacks there, you know.
Right.
So, you know, the prejudice, everybody thinks that the South was prejudiced. Well, to a degree they were. So was the North. It was part of the culture of the whole country at that period.
Right. But at least, despite what Harriet Beecher Stowe wrote in Uncle Tom's Cabin, they did treat the slaves well. And up north, they had slaves in the North, too. I mean, some of your eastern states.
Yeah,
you
had slaves in northern states basically up until the 1820s, 1830s.
Well, even after the war.
Yeah, and my co-author, Donnie Kennedy, has written a book called Myths of American Slavery a few years ago. And he mentioned in one place in there that the North could hardly consider fighting to free the slaves because you had slaves in New Jersey and Delaware as late as 1860.
Right.
Those people didn't go to war to free slaves.
In fact, it wasn't even an issue until a year after the war started, right?
No, it was. You stop and think about it. Here again, from a common sense perspective, had I lived down here in 1861 and I had a neighbor up the street, you know, well, up the road 4 or 5 miles, who had 40 or 50 slaves, and I didn't have any, would I have gone to war and fought 4 long, miserable years putting up with what the Southern soldiers had to put up with just so he could keep his slaves? Would you? I wouldn't. And most people wouldn't and didn't. That wasn't what it was all about with them. You know, slavery was not, I mean, it probably were a handful of people that went to preserve slavery, but it would have been a small minority. And the average Southern soldier couldn't have cared less one way or the other because he didn't have any.
Right. So how did the Emancipation Proclamation come into existence? Who was the people behind that?
How was what?
Who were the people that that were behind that?
Well, I mean, Lincoln wrote it. I don't know if he, you know, had people behind him or not. I think to a large degree it was Lincoln's. But if you look at it, it didn't really free anybody. I mean, he freed the slaves in the South where he had no authority. He didn't free slaves in Delaware, Maryland, Kentucky, Missouri, and the parts of Louisiana that the Yankees had already captured back. You know, those people stayed in bondage until 1865. You know, December 1865, they passed the 13th Amendment. They weren't free until then.
Right. Now, the Emancipation Proclamation was actually an executive order. It occurred on September
22nd. Yeah, in a sense it was, and it was a war measure. It was propaganda. They, you know, Lincoln was afraid that, you know, France or England might come into the war on the side of the South and help them out militarily. And so this proclamation basically kept England and France out of the war. And that was what it was for. It wasn't to help the slaves at all. Because, like I say, he freed slaves where he had no authority to free them, and where he had the authority to free them, he didn't bother. So
okay.
People who point to the Emancipation Proclamation say, well, Lincoln freed the slaves. I mean, read it. Yeah, I challenge them. Go back and read the proclamation in full and see what it says.
Right.
Because it lists all the areas in the country where, you know, that were exempt from the proclamation.
Amazing. All righty. So it wasn't about slavery. What was it then about?
Well, it was about tariffs, for one thing, and nobody wants to touch that today. They say, oh, tariffs is a dead letter. Don't bother with that. The thing is, the South paid 80% of the tariffs for the whole country. And if Lincoln lost that 80%, what was that going to do to his tariffs?
Right, and they used most of that money to build up infrastructure in the North, correct?
Well, most of the economic build-up?
Right, I mean, they used the tariffs that the South
paid. The North was mostly industrial.
Right,
South was agrarian. But the thing is, you know, you got big tariffs from cotton and tobacco and other products that the South shipped, you know, across. And then when some of those things came back as finished products, then there was a big tariff on them. And that affected the South because then they had to pay most of the tariff.
Right. And slavery actually ended peacefully in everywhere else because it just didn't work.
Well, yeah, what they did in England, if I recall correctly, was they paid the slave owners for the slaves, or compensated emancipation.
Mm-hmm.
Had Lincoln decided to do that, it would have cost him less to pay the Southern slave owners than it did to fight the war. And they could have gotten rid of it that way, without the loss of human life, without the destruction of property. But if you look at the people involved, the loss of property, the destruction of property in the South is partly what it was all about.
Right. And that certainly happened. And also the destruction of property, the destruction of people. Weren't there like 50,000 civilians that were slaughtered?
Yeah, they have no record of what happened to some of those. Yeah, a lot of them were killed. They had, you know, who knows how many civilians were killed in Georgia when Sherman went through. Who knows how many starved to death because he didn't leave them any food. You know, women and kids, old people, non-combatants, you know.
And, right. Collateral damage, right? That's what we call them now?
Please?
Collateral damage, isn't
that what
we call them now?
Yeah, that's what they call it now, collateral damage. You know, it's the same thing. You had a lot of collateral damage in the War on Northern Aggression, but they don't deal with that. You know,
right.
They had a thing on 3 or 4 years ago about Sherman's march through Georgia, the History Channel, and I thought, well, it might be interesting to see what they do with this. I got them through about the first 5 or 6 minutes of it, and I could tell where they were going. And my wife was sitting there next to me. She said, I don't want to watch this. And she turned over and got a book or something. And I watched another 2 or 3 minutes of it, and I thought, I don't really want to watch it either.
Right.
It's not history.
How true. All righty, we do have to go to a break. We will be right back in 3 minutes. Stay tuned.
How would you like to own land? A refuge to escape from big cities, possible food shortages, the collapse of the dollar, or just a vacation trip is now available to you. Lots of fishing and hunting are available just across the Rio Grande River. Own your personal Colorado Wilderness RV lot within 3 stones' throw of the Rio Grande River for $1,395. Quarter acre lots, county road access. All lots come with warranty deed. All just for $1,395. Call 785-672-3141. 785-672-3141. Or go online to ColoradoRiverLots.com for more information and to see photos. It is away from civilization, a good business investment, and a low-cost protection plan. Call today, 785-672-3141.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology. All while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit PureFectFilters.com.
Are you prepared? Are you ready? You should be. CampingSurvival.com is your source for camping supplies, survival gear, and survival food. Whether you are an emergency preparedness-minded individual interested in MRE and colloidal silver, a hardcore hiker in need of paracord, a water filter system, and fire piston, or just need a basic first aid kit or emergency kit for the family, CampingSurvival.com is the right place. Call CampingSurvival.com. Today. Toll free 800-537-1339. CampingSurvival.com. It's not about the end of the world. It's not about surviving a hypothetical plane crash. It's about the satisfaction you get knowing you can take care of yourself and or your family in any situation, anytime, anywhere. Call now 800-537-1339.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest today is Al Benson. He is the co-author, along with Walter Kennedy, of Red Republicans and Lincoln's Marxism in the Civil War, and Lincoln's Marxist. His websites are revisedhistory.wordpress.com and albensonjr.com. And we were talking about, I was doing some other things during the break, looking at notes and whatnot. But when you consider that, you mentioned earlier General Weidemeyer, and Engels had Friedrich Engels 1853, wrote to General Weidemeyer to describe the revolutionary process made in Germany. He wrote, and I quote, "Clear the way for us, such as a single and indivisible republic, which is the first step in establishing a communistic nation. The dissolution of the U.S. through the secession of the South was anathema to the communist agenda." The reason the 48ers, who had fought to establish an indivisible Germany, were now willing to fight to preserve the Union as a foundation for communism. And Marx congratulated Lincoln on his presidential reelection. He reiterated the communist conviction that the war was essential to the advancement of the working class. The eradication of slavery opened the floodgates to class warfare. The war functioned to destroy the middle class through the burden of a monstrous national debt placed upon them.
Well, the war was essential to the communists because it consolidated power in Washington. I mean, before the war, the average person didn't have that much to do with the federal government. I mean, when he went to the post office or if he rode over a post road or something. But, I mean, the average person didn't deal with the federal government that much. He dealt a little bit with the state governments, but practically everything was on the local level, which is as it should be. Look at how much we have to deal with the federal government today. I mean, you can't do anything without, you know, there's got some kind of a federal regulation about it, you know, and there's so many of the federal regulations that even they can't keep track of them. How are we supposed to? And the war centralized power in Washington. It never came back to the states in any meaningful way. And that was really one of the things with the war. Interestingly enough, you look at the Pledge of Allegiance, was written by a socialist in Massachusetts in 1892, who was so far to the left that even in Massachusetts, his church asked him to resign. He was preaching sermons about Jesus being a communist. And he's the one that wrote the Pledge of Allegiance. And look at the one thing in there. One nation, indivisible. You know, that's the socialist socialist agenda. Indivisible. Right. Everything governed from the center. You know, no power out anywhere, but, you know, you do everything with our permission. We're in the center. We run it. You know, and that was the whole idea. The Pledge of Allegiance, in a sense, was a kind of a pot shot of Reconstruction. And it said to the Southerners, what you people did 30 years ago was wrong. You know?
Al, we do have to take our 60-second top-of-the-hour break. We'll be right back and talk about this in the next hour.